I'd like to bid everyone a very pleasant good morning, and we're glad that you're with us today. Hope you brought your Bibles with you as we begin to study from God's Word. Several weeks ago, I was visiting with a friend in the community, and this particular friend was telling me that he did not believe that Jesus was the Son of God. And, you know, that's kind of unusual around here that there would be someone who would openly say something like that. And I'm not saying that I would not engage with that person or would not talk to them about the faith of Jesus Christ. I certainly would. And I certainly had an opportunity to do that. And I continue to do that even as we speak right now. But nevertheless, I got me to thinking about that question. Well, how exactly might I demonstrate to someone that Jesus was the Son of God, that Jesus was divine, that He was wholly different from us in many ways, but at the same time, He was a human, and at the same time as being a human, He was also God. And there are some things that are said in the Scriptures about that, and I got to thinking about it. I thought, well, we could go to all the prophecies about Jesus in the Old Testament, and we could look at those prophecies and see how Jesus fulfilled those prophecies. That's one way that we might kind of show that Jesus is divine. Another way we might show is by looking at the good things that Jesus did, the miracles that He did in helping people, even helping people in adverse situations and adverse circumstances. That might be another way of looking at it. We could show the wonderful love that Jesus showed toward others, and especially the love that He showed to us in going to the cross. And many of those things might be good discussions for us to have, but then I thought of something else, which is the topic of our lesson this morning. And that is what Jesus did not do. And when I think about what Jesus did not do, to me, that is more of a convincing argument for His divinity and for the fact that He was the Son of God than some of the things perhaps that He did do, even though the things that He did do were wonderful and tremendous and amazing and certainly good things. But let's think about for a moment what Jesus did not do. And as we look at this lesson, what I have in mind is this, that under ordinary circumstances, that Jesus did not do things that most of us would have done. And if we think about those things, we'll be thinking about those things in just a moment. And by virtue of the fact that most people would have acted where Jesus simply did not, demonstrates a tremendous amount of self-control on His part, and I'm going to say that it demonstrates a divine self-control that He had that we just do not have. And so as we think about Jesus' extraordinary behavior this morning, in circumstances where any regular person might have acted differently than Jesus, we will conclude that He was, in fact, divine. In Isaiah 53 and verse 7, we get a hint at some of the things that Jesus did not do. Now, you remember Isaiah 53, that great chapter of the Bible that talks about the suffering of God's servant. Well, in Isaiah 53 and verse 7, we read this, "He was oppressed and He was afflicted, yet He opened not His mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so He opened not His mouth." Now that was prophesied that Jesus would act in that way, and that was something He did not do, you see. He did not open His mouth, even in the face of tremendous opposition, even in the face of being accused of blasphemy, even in the face of saying, "We are going to put you to death because of this," yet He opened not His mouth. You know, Isaiah wrote about Jesus' trials some 800 years before Jesus existed. And in looking at this verse, we understand that most of us would have responded back immediately. Why, if it were me that were being accused of that, why, I would want to defend myself. I would want to say, well, wait a minute, you're accusing me of blasphemy, and yet what have I done? Where have I blasphemed? I haven't blasphemed. I've said this, and I've said that, and I would explain my actions, and I would explain what was going on. If most of us were being treated unjustly, then we would let others know for sure what is happening here. We would say, why, this is an unjust situation, an unjust circumstance. But this is not how Jesus responded to the false accusations against him. His remarkable restraint is really evidence for his extraordinary and supernatural character. What did Jesus not do? Let's look at four things this morning that Jesus did not do. Things that I think will help us understand that he is divine. First of all, Jesus did not beg for disciples. You know, I think as we look at the religious world around us today, and if you were to turn on any religious television station, you would find all kinds of religious people begging and pleading and asking, you know, send in your money, or come to us, or please let us help you in some way or in some manner. And it seems that, seemingly, some would just do about anything if you would just come to their church, you know, or just follow them. Jesus did not take this approach to ministry. Look at Matthew chapter 8 and verses 18 through 22 for just a moment. Matthew chapter 8 and verses 18 through 22. It says, "And when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave a commandment to depart to the other side." Think about that for just a minute. Most religious leaders would want to manipulate that crowd. You see, would want to massage it and make it greater, bigger. What did Jesus do? He departed to the other side. He wanted to go away. Notice verse 19. "Then a certain scribe came and said to him, 'Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go.'" Why, that's exactly what most religious leaders want to hear, right? We want followers. We want people to come and to listen and to do. But listen to what Jesus said to this man who said, "I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus didn't say, "Well, come on then." He said this, "Foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." In other words, if you're going to follow me, you better know what you're getting into. You better pay attention to what's going on around you here, because you're not going to get the comforts that you expect to get. Look at what he says next, which is even more shocking, in fact, as we read this text in verse 21. "Then another of his disciples said to him, 'Lord, let me first go and bury my father.'" Why, here is a man who seemed to be a disciple of Jesus, and he wanted to follow Jesus, but he said, "You know, first I need to take care of some family business." But Jesus' response was this, "Follow me, and let the dead bury their own dead." How could Jesus take such an attitude towards someone like that? It was because he knew who he was, and he knew that mankind was supposed to follow him first. You see, Jesus wasn't just another human being. He was God in the flesh, and he expected to be treated that way. But how many practically beg others to listen to them today regarding religious matters when Jesus did not? In John 6, in verses 66 and 67, we read, "From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. Then Jesus said to the 12, 'Do you also want to go away?'" It doesn't say that Jesus went after them, fawning over them, said, "Well, come back. Why are you going away? Come back." He did not do that. But rather, he wanted people to follow him, not because of the loaves and the fishes that they received, but because of the truth that He imparted. And if they weren't going to follow Him because of the truth, He let them go. What remarkable restraint. Jesus did not beg for disciples. But then secondly, when we think about what Jesus did not do, we note that Jesus did not respond in kind to His accusers. In 1 Peter chapter 2, in verses 21 through 23, Peter is trying to help those who are in very difficult circumstances, very difficult situations. And he's trying to help them understand how to apply the gospel of Christ to their life when suffering wrongfully. And many of us perceive that we've suffered wrongfully from time to time, over and over again. But Peter says this, "For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in His steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in His mouth, who, when He was reviled, did not revile in return. When He suffered, He did not threaten, but committed Himself to Him who judges righteously." How many of us, when talked about in less than favorable terms, would then want to turn around and talk about that person in less than favorable terms? Why, the temptation is enormous, isn't it? If somebody's talking bad about us, then we want to turn around and talk bad about them. And we often just do just that. But not Jesus. No. When He was reviled, He did not revile in return. When He suffered, He did not threaten. Why, if somebody were making me suffer, well, I would want to say, "Well, you're going to get yours. One day somebody's going to come after you." I would probably say something like that if somebody were making me suffer, but not Jesus. No, when He suffered, He did not threaten. But what did He do? He committed Himself to Him who judges righteously. Listen to some of the things that happened to Jesus when He was on trial with the Sanhedrin Council in Matthew 26 in verses 62 and 63. It says, "And the high priest arose and said to Him, 'Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you?' But Jesus kept silent." Remarkable restraint. Even when others were accusing Him and falsely accusing Him in that regard, Jesus kept silent. He answered nothing. So much so that even Pilate marveled at Jesus' restraint. You know, Pilate was the governor of Judea at that time, and he was used to the judicial system, and he knew exactly how people behave when they were accused by others. They wanted to answer. They wanted to reply. And in fact, one of the tenets upon which Roman law was founded was that a person shouldn't be able to be accused without having to answer the accusation. But look what it says about Pilate in Matthew 27, verses 13 through 14. "Then Pilate said to Him, 'Do you not hear how many things testify against you?' But He answered him not one word, so that the governor marveled greatly." Pilate was just amazed at the fact that Jesus did not reply to his accusers. It was certainly not normal for someone to do that. And we see that Jesus' character testifies to the truth of His divinity. In Matthew 27, verses 30 through 31, even when Jesus was on the cross, nailed there, it says that they spat on Him. They took the reed and they struck Him on the head. And when they had mocked Him, they took the robe off of Him, put His own clothes on Him, and led Him away to be crucified. That was before He was on the cross. But then we'll get to His being on the cross in just a minute. But they did all these things to Him, and yet He didn't reply once. How many of us would have insisted on being defended? How many of us would have said, "Well, where's my attorney? How many of us would have said, no, these charges against me are false? How many of us would have told Pilate, why, of course they're not telling the truth? But Jesus did none of those things. He didn't. Jesus did not respond in kind to his accusers. And even when he was on the cross, and there were those who came by and accused him, he did not reply. Even at that point where it would have made no difference whether he said something or nothing, from a human perspective, he did not reply. You see, it was what Jesus did not do that spoke of his remarkable character. But then number three, and I find this fascinating, that Jesus did not condemn those who put him on the cross. Look at Matthew chapter 27 for just a moment. Matthew 27 and verses 39 through 44. Matthew 27, 39 through 44. And those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise, the chief priests also, mocking with the scribes and elders, said, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he is the King of Israel, let him come down now from the cross and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now if he will have him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.' Even the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him with the same thing." All these people going by, the people who even put him on the cross, at a point where it would have made no difference. He was already on the cross. He was already dying. Would have made no difference, you know, humanly speaking, if he had responded to them or not. And yet Jesus did not condemn those who put him on the cross. In fact, just the opposite of condemnation, Jesus prayed for them. In Luke chapter 23 and verse 34, Luke records these extraordinary, remarkable, divine words that Jesus spoke. "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Wow! Who would have said that among mankind? Who would have thought to offer forgiveness while hanging between heaven and earth and about to die? I don't know that I would do that. In fact, I probably would not. And I'm just going to say I would not have. Why, I would have been telling them, "You are killing an innocent person. Take me down from here. You don't know what you're doing. You're murdering someone that you shouldn't be murdering. This is wrong. It's illegal. It's unethical. It's all of the wrong things that you could possibly wrongly do, you know. I would be protesting the whole affair." But Jesus didn't. He didn't do that. And even the thief, one of the thieves on the cross that were hanging there with him, recognized something about Jesus that was different. He recognized the extraordinary character of Jesus while he was hanging on that cross. Because while he reviled him at first, halfway through that crucifixion, that other thief turned to him and said, while the other thief was putting railings on him, he said to the other thief, he said, "We are hanging here justly, but this man is hanging here unjustly." And then he turned to Jesus and he said, "Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And again, Jesus' response was remarkable. He didn't say, "Oh, well, now that you're about to die, you're changing your tune, aren't you?" He didn't say that. He didn't say, "Why, you cursed me earlier and now you're singing my praises?" Now, that's something I might have said. But Jesus didn't say that. But instead, Jesus said, "Assuredly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." What remarkable restraint. What remarkable compassion. What remarkable forgiveness that Jesus had. How many would have condemned those involved for killing an innocent person? How many would have answered with hateful words with more hateful words? But Jesus didn't do that. See, it was what Jesus did not do that showed his remarkable character. It was what Jesus did not do that showed his divinity. And then finally, Jesus did not seek to escape the cross. Possibly the most difficult thing for our humanly categorized minds to understand was that Jesus knew the cross was coming. He predicted it to his disciples. He told them over and over again that yes, the Son of Man had to go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders, the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed and raised the third day. Matthew 16:21, and many other passages in the gospel accounts say the same thing. And Jesus said this to his disciples over and over again. And you would think, if you knew that this was going to happen to you, why you could have gone down to Egypt. You could have gone up to Greece or to Rome, somewhere else except Jerusalem. Why would you stay there when you knew that this horrible situation was coming upon you? I would have fled. I would have gotten out of town. I would have gone somewhere else, anywhere else. But not Jesus. He knew what needed to be done, and he knew the reason it needed to be done, and he didn't seek to escape it, but rather he embraced the Father's will for his life. Not my will, he prayed, but thine be done. And he went to that cross knowing exactly what would happen. Even at one point when his disciples drew swords to defend him, Jesus' response to the disciples was not, hey, you go ahead and fight and let me get out of here. It was, put your swords up in their places, for all those who live by the sword will die by the sword. And then he said this, or do you not think that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels? It wasn't that Jesus didn't know how to escape. It wasn't that Jesus was somehow cornered or trapped or didn't realize how he could get out of this. No, he exercised remarkable restraint, and he did what needed to be done. It was what Jesus didn't do that proved he was no ordinary human, but rather divine. He didn't beg for disciples. He didn't respond in kind to his accusers, and he didn't condemn those who put him on the cross. And when the time came for him to go to the cross, he went. He didn't seek to escape. What a remarkable life that Jesus led, and what tremendous evidence. Evidence that even Pilate recognized, evidence that even the high priest recognized, and evidence even those Roman soldiers recognized that crucified him, because when he died, the centurion who was standing by said these words, "Surely this was the Son of God." Now, if he could come to that conclusion, a hardened Roman soldier who understood how evil and wicked men were, and even himself, if he could come to that conclusion that Jesus was the Son of God while he hung on that cross and died there, then we can too. The only question is, will we? Will we recognize the evidence that is before us and understand that, in fact, Jesus is who he claimed to be? Will we then give our lives to him, hearing his word and believing it, repenting of our sins, confessing him as Lord, and identifying with him in baptism? Will we then live for him each and every day? And then will we go to our graves having confessed that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and recognizing his authority over our lives? How will we respond to what Jesus did not do? I hope that you will give yourself to him this very hour, and you can do so right now while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.